Pensacola, Florida, and recording the conversation between Bill Brooks and Dave Rice. Bill, you were editor of the Sun Commercial, an area newspaper in southwestern Indiana, for many years, and I'd like for you to reflect upon your perceptions and thoughts about Indiana higher education prior to coming onto the Board of Trustees of the University of Southern Indiana.
Well, Dave, let me make one correction. We're in Gulf Breeze, and Gulf Breeze likes to have a little local patriotism.
That's right. I'm sorry about that.
The other thing is, I was editor and publisher of the Vincennes Sun Commercial, which was a small-town daily newspaper there in southwestern Indiana. And because I was in Indiana, in Vincennes, I had probably a little different perspective. Vincennes University was and is the only junior college, only two-year college there in the state of Indiana. Vincennes University gave me some feel for what education for older students meant, as well as the fact that Vincennes University operated on an open admissions basis. And one of the things that I've learned by talking to the people at Vincennes University was that whether we enjoy it or not, Indiana, in particular Southern Indiana, had at that time, and I don't know how much the need still exists, but there was a need to be able to provide a better level of education for a sizable proportion of the population there in Southern Indiana. Indiana, of course, has been noted for a long time for the contributions of Indiana University as liberal arts and maybe as a medical school. Purdue, certainly in engineering, and you a graduate of Purdue, and certainly that's well known all over the country, and then Notre Dame. And in addition to that, the outstanding private schools there in Indiana, a combination of DePaul and Wabash and Hanover, for instance. But the other thing that struck me when I was asked to be on the board of Southern Indiana was that the University of Southern Indiana, in my opinion, was in a unique position to meet the kind of need that existed, particularly in Southern Indiana, in higher education. And it was a need that was not being filled by Indiana University. And it was not being filled by Purdue or Notre Dame. The financial cost of DePaul and Wabash and Hanover limited their accessibility to a lot of potential students. And I found out later on the same thing applied to the University of Evansville. So from what I'd been able to learn about living in Indiana, and you have to remember that I lived there for 30 years, and the day I left Vincennes, they still said, well, you know, he's that fellow that talks funny. And I said, all you Hoosiers talk funny to me. But from what I'd been able to learn, there was a need for an institution of higher learning beyond high school level that could serve the people, particularly there in Southern Indiana, that would benefit them over the long term. So that's the way that that was my background as far as education was concerned, and my feeling about being connected with the University of Southern Indiana. Let me make one other point. Don't ever believe that newspaper people are real smart. I wasn't too sure about what the University of Southern Indiana was when Bob Orr asked me how I'd like to be on the Board of Trustees. And I figured I'd find out, which is also the way newspaper people tend to operate, was that, you know, when you when you're dumb, you need to learn something in a hurry. So I learned about the University of Southern India. I learned about you particularly, and the fact of what you had accomplished down there.
Well, Governor Orr then appointed you as to the Board of Trustees. That was a charter board.
Yeah, that's correct.
Had its first meeting, as I recall, in July of 1985.
That's right.
And it was an outstanding board of trustees with a wide variety of experiences. And I know this is one of the things that Governor Orr was looking for, was a wide range of experiences and also geographic distribution throughout the state of Indiana. Give us some of your reflections as a board member. We went through the process of establishing the organization, reemphasizing or studying the curriculum, and charting the direction of University of Southern Indiana. Give us some of your reflections as a charter board member during that period of time.
Well, you need to, not need to, but it would be useful to remember that I was put in a position of dealing with people who had a whole lot wider experience in the field of education than I ever had. You had John Prues, who was certainly had been in the education business for a long time. George Weatherby was a PhD. Percy Clark was a superintendent of schools up there in Indianapolis. You and Byron Wright and the rest of the people there at the university were all highly qualified in the field of education, and the first thing I had to do was try to learn what was going on, and literally to find out what the university was up to and how it functioned and where it fitted. I found very rapidly that the university served an adult population as much as anything else. A lot more so than a traditional undergraduate population. I know it's not, some people tended to look down their nose and said, well, you don't want to describe it as a commuter school, but there was a lot of truth to that. You had a sizable chunk of your students who drove automobiles out there, either from Evansville or from the area around Evansville, to go to school, and they were older students. You could walk around the campus and see them. And I rapidly learned that a lot of the university's effort and interest was in meeting the needs of those adult students, which got back to, as far as I was concerned, what little I'd been able to pick up about the requirement to try to provide more educational opportunity to people in Southern Indiana. These were obviously people who had gone to high school sometime in their lives or had enough background to where they could meet your requirements. And I've forgotten, you had an open education, open admission.
Yes.
You didn't have any, there was no high school requirement. It's just quite,
open admissions would be incorrect in many respects, but if a student didn't meet the qualifications, we would give them a conditional admission.
Yeah.
If a student wanted to try.
Right. Well, what I'm trying to get back to, though, is that one of the things that I remember was the statistics on the level of the percentage of graduates of high school in Southern Indiana was low compared to the rest of the state.
Very low, okay.
And very low. And so, I found that out pretty quickly. I suppose this is with sort of an in-the-family tape. I also found out that we were in a crosstown argument with the people at the University of Evansville real fast, that they weren't fascinated with the idea of the University of Southern Indiana being where it was or doing what it did. I was intrigued with the fact that the great Roger Brannigan had gone down there and had sort of steered you all away from trying to get carried away too much, but that he had also laid hands on a whole chunk of land down there, so you had a full opportunity to expand. The university is not landlocked. It's not not surrounded to where it doesn't have any place to go. And it was also obvious to me that after I'd been on that board just a short time, that the enrollment was just going to go up. This was not a university that didn't have a future. It had very much of a future.
It'd be interesting knowing that Mr. Lomberg of the museum this spring did a pictorial display of the two universities in town. And the first display on the University of Evansville was a bulletin board about, it looked like a piece of plywood or something like that, that I believe it was Mr. George Clifford did in early 1914, 15, 16, when they were trying to get the Moores Hill College to come to Evansville. And one of his statements in that was that the university, or the community, was large enough to accommodate three colleges and universities. I think those concerns and anxieties have matured now, where there's a realization that the community benefits from having both the public and private, and with Ivy Tech being developed, we now are the three college town. That was interesting. I recall very well that first board meeting. The staff had put together an agenda, and it was a lengthy agenda, coming back to your point of wanting to learn. And I'm not sure whether you made the motion, but someone made the motion, let's table all of this until we've had a time to study it.
I probably was the one that did that, because I was just at a loss of, you know, this was a brand new experience for me. The other thing I really should throw into this, I suppose, is that don't ever underestimate either a political contribution or a golf game, because the only way that I got on this board was that I had a friend who was an ardent Republican, and Ben Sands, that talked me into going down and playing in the Bob Orr Open all the time. And the way that I was invited on the board was that Bob Orr would come to these political outings on that golf course up there. And he played par three with everybody, every person that came through, and played the par three, and it was a little contest. And I walked up on the tee, and I'm not even sure that I got the ball across the pond after the conversation, because Bob Orr said, Bill, how would you like to be on the board of trustees at the University of Southern Indiana? And I said, Governor, are you serious? And he said, yes. And I said, well, how long do I have to think about it? And he said, well, not too long, but said, if you want to think about it, you can. And I said, well, all right, fine, I'll be on the board. And what that amounted to is, I guess I got myself on the board for a political contribution rather than from my ability and knowledge in the field of education.
Well, I had had a couple conversations with the governor about the, not the compensation, not the individuals that he was selecting for the board, but in those conversations he said he wanted to select an outstanding board and to represent the total state. So there was more than just a moment's reflection that went into that, I'm certain. But back to the other, I recall a staff conversation after that about we knew we had a good board because they were going to want to have the total information for the decision making, and I think we did convince you to.
That's right.
To at least employ the administrative staff.
That's right.
And you did do that.
That's right. There was no argument.
The rest
Well, I don't have no way of knowing, but I don't think that any of the other board members, Bob Fair may have, and of course the local people, Joel Daniel and Carol Rust, they'd have probably a good handle on what USI was and what it was about. And
probably George Weathersby.
George, right.
Former commissioner.
Right.
Yes.
George Weathersby. But I'm reasonably sure that there was part of the board that was interested in at least in finding out what we'd gotten ourselves into.
Well, I think the other perspective the governor had was that he wanted a diverse board to have experience from many backgrounds.
And that's
valuable to us.
He had that.
Yes.
There was a wide.
Yes.
It was not a narrow group, at least when I was on it, it was. He had everything from somebody such as John Pruce, who was a professional educator, to somebody such as I, who really had the least education of anybody on the board. When you stop and think about it, I only had a bachelor's degree. Joe had just gone to high school,
yes,
I guess, down
yes,
in Kentucky.
Yes.
I'd forgotten about Joe.
Yes.
But it was one of the best experiences I ever had in my life, was serving on that. And I would, in that context, I'd like to think that I had made some kind of contribution to not only to USI, but to education and to helping people in that part of the state. Because the fact that USI has grown and prospered and served those folks, is evidence of that. That there's no question that the need was there, or it couldn't have done what it has done and couldn't have placed itself to continue to grow as I think it will.
I've frequently said that we'd like to take credit for everything that happened, but in realistic terms, what we're dealing with was having the right product in the right market at the right time.
Well, even so, you also have to give yourself credit, though, for having created the product. If the product hadn't been right, it never would have gone.
It's interesting that one of the conversations that the board had was about how large the campus should become and how much it should grow, and that Systems Research Incorporated did a poll asking basically if parents and grew out of that conversation with the Board of Trustees, would you encourage your children or your grandchildren to go to USI? And as I recall, something like 3 out of 4 of the respondents said yes.
Sure.
I think the product that talk about people with products.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think the products of the institution in terms of its students had proven itself, or you would not have had a response, because 3/4 of our students were remaining in the area.
Well, that's the other thing that struck me was the fact that you didn't have a transient student population. You had people who were going to school and they were going to live there where they'd gone to school.
So we have to credit the faculty who on a day-to-day basis really worked with the students and nurtured them. I know I've heard many faculty members talk about the satisfaction of taking these raw jewels and polishing them and making excellent products from them. So we have to credit the students and their and I think it's an argument again for that open admissions.
Right.
That people who want the opportunity and will take advantage of it, we should keep those opportunities there. But it was interesting that result was that the students were making it as employees, great impact in the region.
Well, there was one other thing about USI, and I hope you won't get upset with me about it, but I was also struck and pleased by the fact that at a time when some of the other institutions of higher learning, both in Indiana and around the country, were involved in the students and part of the faculty involved in what I considered to be maybe either unfortunate or radical or irritating activities and their general outlook. The people at USI just went about the business of trying to do the best they could to learn what they could in class and to run a good college and let the rest of this commotion go somewhere else. I have often wondered whether that was a reflection of your outlook as a Purdue graduate and someone that just didn't exactly encourage that sort of activity on a college campus. But that, to me, is part of the character and an addition part of the to the students, the benefit that they got from it. They weren't wandering around in never-never land and intellectually, in my opinion, chasing ideas that really can't stand up over the long term.
We talk about having your feet on the ground and your heads in the clouds.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what we were dealing with. The students were employed, they were working their way through college, and they didn't have time to be successful in the job and going to school, and many of them married and had a family.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And do those kinds of activities. So it really...
And, you know, I'm an older person by definition, Dave. I'm 73 years old now. And I just find myself at a loss sometimes trying to deal intellectually with with some of the arguments and some of the approaches that have been taken at other colleges and institutions. And I was comfortable being on that board of trustees, figuring that was something I would not have to deal with and would not have to, because as you found out, I have a bad habit of not keeping my mouth closed, and if it had come to that, I'm sure I would have expressed myself and probably wound up not being able to deal too well with what was going on.
That's an interesting observation, and I had it expressed by a faculty member, I believe, from the University of Tennessee, who came to one of our either fall or winter faculty meetings, and we were having a cup of coffee chatting before the meeting started, and she said, is this your faculty? And I said, yes. And she said, I don't believe it. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I speak to faculty across the nation in meetings, and your faculty are well-dressed, they have coats and ties on, and I don't see this in college faculties. Do you have a dress code? and I said, no, we've never talked about that. And she said, well, how do you explain this? And I said, the only way I can explain it is that most of our students have a job.
Yeah.
And they either come from their job to the class, or they come to class dressed to go to the job. And I think what we have is a reflection that the faculty are meeting the expectations of the employees and the students. And we've always it was an interesting observation.
From
another perspective of the same concept.
Sort of reinforces what my outlook was on the thing, it made my position on the board a lot easier, because I read about some of the approaches that other colleges have taken, and I think they're mistaken. And I would have hated to have sat in a board meeting with you and gone through that famous line that I think Oliver Cromwell once used about one of the parliaments in England when he said, "I pray you gentlemen think you in the bowels of Christ, you may be mistaken." And as you found out, I have the unfortunate tendency that if I've got something on my mind or if I have an opinion, I express it. I don't sit there and say, well, I think I'll figure out how everybody's going along and then I'll go with them.
I think that was one of the real merits of the charter board, and has continued to be, that people did express their understanding of expectations and opinions. One topic that always comes to the university environment is that of athletics, and I know you had some pretty firm feelings about the direction that we might move in
certain athletic
fields.
That shows you just how contrary I suppose I can be. But you know, I was a graduate of the University of Alabama, and Alabama's a football team with a college attached to it. And I have a great love for Alabama. I had a good time there, and it's a fine university. But when I could see the growth of the students there at USI, and that's another subject too. You know, you kept asking us for projections, and the board kept putting down numbers, and all of them were wrong. We were always too low. But the only thing I could see was that I remembered when the University of Alabama had 5,000 students and one of the hottest football teams in the country. And I could see USI was headed toward 5,000 students just as hard as it could charge. And USI didn't need a football team. It would have demanded so much money and so much attention and so much energy. And I just kept repeating over and over again, no football. And I guess the other board members got tired of it, but you never have gotten into football yet, have you, Dave?
No. I think always felt it should leave something for the next president to do.
All right.
But I think soccer has come into the forefront today, and I would suspect that would continue to be the case in the years ahead. One of the things that the university did not get into while you were on the board, but through the efforts of Southern Indiana Higher Education Incorporated, with the guidance of Joe Daniel, the housing projects were developed adjacent to campus. What were your thoughts as that development took place?
I think that's going to be a natural part of the university's growth. And I was interested in the way in which Joel Daniels and his group down there had financed the housing that was there while I was on the board. But I think that over a period of time that the university is going to almost be forced to offer reasonable housing for students who don't live there within easy driving distance, or who can get back and forth from a job in Evansville or across the river in Henderson or in that general area. So I think it's something that will come. It was not it was getting to be a need when I was still on the board, because the department stayed full and had a waiting list. And then y'all bought those other apartments over there from Bob Greasy, the football player. And it's just a question of time before you have to increase the residential availability there on campus.
You'd be interested in knowing that last legislature did authorize university to buy those from Southern Indiana Higher Education. And I think their market value is in excess of $14 million. Bonds that the university now has about $9 million, and SIHE gave about $500,000 of accrued depreciation.
Yeah.
Well, any other
Well,
thoughts?
Dave, that was another one of your good financial deals. You were always pretty good at that. The only other thing I could add is that my peculiar contribution to the board was that I proofread the minutes. And I used to, and invariably I would either find a few misspelled words or a couple of phrases I didn't like, and would ask if the minutes be amended accordingly, and everybody sort of laughed at me. But I'm serious, it's worth it. Be sure somebody proofreads your minutes, because eventually they're going to be a historic record. And you don't want to go back and have the minutes where somebody says, well, I know what they mean, even if they didn't say that. That's what causes a lot of trouble when you have something, when somebody's saying, well, I know what they mean. That was my only peculiar contribution to the board, was that I always read the minutes to be sure that we had the words spelled properly and that we said what we thought we had done.
That may have been an easier task, I think, than John Proust tried a few times to edit the student newspaper.
That's a different breed of cat. I wouldn't get into that at all. No, that's not worth it. Let them learn the hard way.
Well, thanks, Bill, for taking the time out of your schedule. No. And we want to add these to the archives of the university and have them try to make them available so that people would have some understanding of some of the background that took place in the development institution.
Well, it's nice of you to thank me, but the other part of it is that I will always be indebted both to you and to Governor Orr and to the University of Southern Indiana. You gave me an opportunity that few people would have. I was the one who benefited more than anything else.
Well,
it was certainly, it was educational, it was useful. I have been most proud of it, and I am most pleased with the fact that you'd even come by and give me the time of day and stop and visit with us when you come to Florida.
Well, I know I speak on behalf of the many students, alumni, and faculty and staff, and thanking you for the contribution you did make in launching a great institution.
Thank you.
Thank you.